Welcome to The Read-Along,
a mini book club for your ears.
I'm your host, Scott.
I'm your other host, Anita.
And join us on a journey through a good book,
one chapter at a time.
Do you like talking about movies? Do you like talking about mediocre movies? Do you like talking about how you could have fixed mediocre movies? Well, I certainly do, and you can listen to me, Scott C. Bourgeois, along with my co-hosts Greg Beaver and Liam Creswick, as we give our notes, and I have some notes. You can follow it now on your podcatcher of choice or support it by visiting patreon.com/ihavesomenotes. So our Easter plans got slightly derailed.
Slightly.
Yeah, we were supposed to host some Easter activities over the long weekend and
have some family over, eat some food, you know.
That kind of fell through. Everybody's been dealing with, like, there's something going around.
Yeah, our daughter has been quite sick.
Yeah.
It turns out that some of my brother's family was a little ill.
Yeah.
So we decided to postpone until everybody was healthy again.
Yeah.
So we've only half Eastered.
Indeed. Half of Easter is on hold.
Yeah.
Until next week.
Yeah. We Eastered with Scott's side of the family, and then next week we're going to Easter with my side of the family.
Yeah. Because come Sunday, everybody was well enough that we could attend an Easter,
mm-hmm.
if not host one. So.
Yeah.
So that's where we're at.
Yeah. Wee. There's so much chocolate.
Yeah. This is like Easter halftime as we get set for more feasting next weekend.
Yes.
Indeed.
Wee.
Hooray.
Book?
Sure.
Yeah.
We had a long weekend, so we were able to read a little ahead of time, which is weird because normally we try to read right up like close to recording time. So it's pretty fresh in our minds before we discuss it. But because we had all this extra time over the long weekend, we ended up reading a little earlier than normal, and we actually had to do a quick refresher before we started recording.
So I was like, yeah, what happened in this chapter? Right.
Which is unusual, but that's the way it went this time.
That's right. I've been refreshed. I'm good to go.
Indeed. So a quick refresher for you, our listener, on our previous chapter, which would have been chapter 14 of our novel, where the girls pack into a vehicle and drive to the observatory to meet with Observer Johnson, who's like the local priest,
I guess,
slash wizard. They have a sit-down chat with him where they ask him all sorts of questions out of context, which make him deeply uncomfortable.
Yes.
And they learn that it's very possible that whoever the killer is, they may be attempting to summon the Turnian and basically ending the world as we know it.
That's kind of what it points to, yeah.
With the stakes laid out, we get into chapter 15 of The Undetectables by Courtney Smith. So this chapter begins kind of on the heels of them meeting with Observer Johnson, and it's another meeting.
Yeah. So they make it back to the house.
And are basically told that Detective Inspector O'Sullivan can meet with them.
Yeah.
Like, and then, immediately.
Yeah. And then there she is. Like, it happens quite quickly.
Yeah. They quickly try to get their ducks in a row and come up with their cover story because O'Sullivan still thinks that Diana is a forensic student who got pranked into going to this active crime scene. And the other two are just like her roommates or something,
I guess.
And they're looking to ask her some questions. And at first, Detective Inspector O'Sullivan is very amenable to this for the most part. She still seems to buy Diana's story. She's pretty friendly about everything. She's all like, oh, you can call me Sully. Like, it's very cash. But she quickly starts poking holes in Diana's story. And Mallory actually even has a thought, like, Diana's very good at lying until she's not.
Yeah, until she's not. Like, she didn't bother to come up with the name of the school she attends, right? Like, really super obvious stuff that just blows her lie wide open.
Yeah, and it quickly crashes and burns. And yes. O'Sullivan's like, well, this conversation is done. And they're like, okay, whoa, hold on. Here's the real deal. We are private detectives who were hired covertly by the Nightmare to look into this investigation on the DL to kind of help you out. And we just want to exchange information. And O'Sullivan is like, I don't believe you. I'm going to call the nightmare.
And, like, rightly so,
yeah.
Right?
Because she has just discovered they were lying to her to begin with.
Exactly. So then O'Sullivan calls the nightmare, and I don't know that that conversation was much help.
No.
I got the impression that he treated O'Sullivan the same way he treated the undetectables.
Oh, absolutely.
Which, with just, like, disdain and crazy assumptions, and I imagine there was a lot of muttering.
Yeah, here's the thing. It's pretty clear that for Van Doren, this whole murder investigation thing is a nuisance.
Yes.
Not, like, a priority.
Right,
it's a nuisance that needs to be dealt with as quickly and as quietly as possible.
It's just this terrible inconvenience that he has to deal with.
Yeah. But if nothing else, in this moment, he does confirm that they are working for him.
At least I think he does.
Certainly to O'Sullivan's satisfaction.
Yes.
Because she comes back in and is like, all right, let's talk.
He's like, all right, fine.
I'm not happy about this. I'm not happy that this is undermining my position, but let's exchange notes and see where we're at. And a little bit of knowledge gets passed around here. Mallory and the other undetectables are careful not to let too much slip. At one point, Cornelia does, like, talk about the magic beetles, and Mallory's like, shut up, but it's kind of out of the bag at that point.
Here's the thing. She's like, we have beetles, and she goes and gets them, and then that's it. No explanation, no, this is what we use them for, just look, we have magic beetles. Like, I'm sure it meant nothing without the context.
Yeah, and in fairness, Cornelia even says after the fact, like, look, I was trying to, like, give her something so that she would trust us, assuming that she's on the up and up. Like, she would be a valuable resource.
Yeah.
And we want to be on her good side, and we already got off on the wrong foot, which they did.
With the big lies.
With the big lies. But yeah, they learn a little bit more about O'Sullivan's background here.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. She was part of the apparent police force in Otterton.
Yes.
She has been promoted after a great deal of time, finally, to Detective Inspector,
mm-hmm.
and got assigned back here to Racton, partly to spearhead this murder investigation. But
yeah.
The local rent-a-cops don't really respect her.
No, not really, which is unfortunate, because you kind of feel for her.
Yeah.
Like, she's clearly in a tough position. She's got a lot to prove.
Mm-hmm.
She's kind of being, you know, stepped on by authority, etc. around her.
Yeah, there's also some personal pressure because she's, like, from a cop family.
Yeah.
So she has, like, that kind of pressure on her, too, to succeed.
Right?
Yeah.
It kind of puts a chip on your shoulder. A
little bit.
And really, these two groups, well, I should say, the Undetectables and O'Sullivan, basically they're just confirming what each other knows, right? So Mallory goes through the case and, you know, says, this is what we know, this is what we know. And O'Sullivan just confirms that. It's like, yep, that's what we got too. That, yes, all of this matches up what I have. And the only new thing that she offers is the recording.
Yeah. It turns out that Custer had a sleep app on his phone.
The kind that records you when you snore, so you know.
So when there's noise in the room, the app turns on because it's assuming that you're snoring. But in this case, it picked up the whistling sound.
Yes.
Which means that it is not a sound that just the victim can hear. It is an audible noise that is occurring. More importantly, it has power even in a recording because all three of the girls are deeply disquieted.
Yeah. Like, it is this, like, otherworldly, horrible shriek. Well, shriek isn't right, but this, like, high-pitched, horrible shrieking whistle, I suppose. They describe it just sounds horrible.
Yeah.
Like, it's just unnerving to hear, and apparently it was quite loud.
And, even the recording of it made Mallory, like, think, I want to bite my tongue now.
Yeah, she's like, this is awful.
Which is, of course,
what
it does.
Yes.
Mallory notes that O'Sullivan doesn't seem to react to it the same way they do, which is a little suspicious on the one hand, but also she's heard the recording before. And Mallory,
probably, like, several times by now,
acknowledges that she might have just been, like, braced for what she was going to hear.
Yeah,
but
probably.
O'Sullivan is still up on our suspect board.
Yes.
So that's possibly a clue. Who knows? But that's really the only information O'Sullivan offers them. And indeed does point out that she was late to arrive at both of the scenes of the crime.
Yep.
She wasn't there right away. And also that she has no alibi.
Well,
that she's willing to offer.
That she's willing to offer up. What she says is she's sure she was somewhere nice, which implies that she doesn't remember, except she 100% remembers.
Or she's just not rising to the bait.
That's
because Diana is not so subtly asking her for an alibi. And then O'Sullivan just kind of like gives her apologies and is like, I'm going to go now. If you find anything else out, please share it with my office.
Which they've already not done, right? They purposely didn't mention the letter.
Well, they certainly didn't tell her that she's one of their suspects.
Well, no.
So keeping that.
But I'm pretty sure that they can consider themselves suspects of hers.
Yeah, and they didn't mention any of their magic forensic science as well. So
no.
They're keeping that to themselves.
Apart from showing her that they had beetles.
That they have magic
and
beetles.
And did not explain them at all.
What they did, however, get with those beetles is a sample of O'Sullivan's magic.
Yes.
Because O'Sullivan is a witch, and she did, like, mutter a little spell at one of them at Cornelia's suggestion so that she could see how they, like, absorbed the magic a little bit.
Color.
So they do actually have a sample of her magic now that they can cross-reference.
Yeah. And my guess is it'll turn red.
Assuming she's a witch, yes.
Yeah.
And we are assuming she is a witch.
We are assuming.
Because that appears to be her background.
Yeah.
That's what we get there.
Yeah.
When O'Sullivan leaves, the girls actually sit down and put their heads together and start kind of walking through what they've learned today and applying it to their suspect board.
Yeah. They basically start working on suspects and applying motives and opportunities and the things you apply to suspects.
They don't really necessarily have opportunities at the moment.
No, they don't. That's
they honestly can't account for any of them at the time of any of the murders. None of them have an alibi because none of them have been asked for an alibi, except for O'Sullivan, who was coy.
Yeah.
Beckett disappeared at the time that Ben died, so we don't know what he was up to. We can't account for any of them during Custer's death.
No. Well, that's the problem, is Custer died seemingly totally alone.
Yeah.
Right?
Except that it was between 11 and 11:30, which is when the app turned on, so they do have a pretty exact time of death now.
A much narrower window, at least.
On the 2nd of October. So, but knowing that the person who is committing the murders is likely doing it in an effort to summon the Turnian, that then turns into, well, what could any of our four prime suspects gain from trying to summon the Turnian?
Yes.
And the best they can figure is a bid for power.
Yes. I'm a little iffy on it because the possibility of ending reality as we know it seems like a little bit of overkill just to deal with the chip on your shoulder.
Mm.
Like when they were talking about O'Sullivan.
Yeah, and that's basically the best they can ascribe to O'Sullivan is she's got a chip on her shoulder. She wants to, like, show up the world.
Yeah.
And that seems extreme.
Right? Really extreme.
For Beckett, the best they can figure is that he was a vampire who was maybe a little more on the pro-vampire war side, and this would be an opportunity to restart that and increase his stock.
Yes.
For Gray Quinn, they just know that he's a scary dude.
Yeah, they don't have anything else on him he's been present, sort of.
Yeah, and they don't trust him, and he's a demon, and he's involved with the Nightmare.
Yes.
And for the Nightmare, I mean, a lust for power is basically his defining character trait.
Yeah, but is he dumb enough to try and end the world to get it?
That's the question.
I don't think he is.
Who knows? Cornelia certainly thinks that he would absolutely be dumb enough to do that. She lays out a lot of the dirt that she already knows about him in this chapter.
Yes.
Which is honestly, with all due respect to Cornelia, largely petty.
Some of it, yeah.
Like, yeah, he's almost like a typical crooked politician.
Yeah.
There's nothing really, and I hate to say this, and this is, if nothing else, a scathing indictment of the modern world. There's nothing too outstanding about his level of corruption based on the average politician.
Ugh, gross, isn't it?
He's self-interested, selfish. He's looking to make a buck. He's got, like, he's on his, like, third girlfriend who's 20 years younger than him. Like, it's all pretty sleazy, but it's all pretty basic sleazy, if that makes sense.
Right? Like, it seems unlikely that he would make this hard turn into, like, world-ending.
Yeah, into, like, apocalyptic villainy.
Yeah, that seems, it seems off-brand.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're really no closer to narrowing down a suspect. And indeed, it's very possible that all four of these are red herrings.
Yeah.
Because we've already posited that maybe Beckett is suspicious, but for another reason. Maybe Gray Quinn and the Nightmare are suspicious because they're up to no good, but they're not involved in the murders. Maybe O'Sullivan is suspicious because there's something else going on there.
Yeah, right.
And maybe there's someone else in the shadows who's in the story already who is actually doing the murders, and we just aren't looking at them because the girls aren't looking at them.
Right.
Especially if they're using a magic knife to do it. Because we don't know if an apparent can use a magic knife.
It's true, we don't.
And if that magic knife was created during the Vampire Wars, which is suggested, and was created by bad guys to do bad things, mm-hmm. it's possible that it's fueled by vampire magic, which might turn up as pink.
Maybe?
What I'm saying is, we posited irresponsibly early on that Jacob could be the killer.
Yes.
And if it turns out that an apparent can use a magic item, Jacob's not off the board.
No, that means Jacob's not off the board.
And he's been hovering in the background this whole time, I'm just saying.
Kind of.
And he's kind of involved with the nightmare, and he could have a motivation where he wants to gain power.
Maybe. We don't know him well enough to know.
He might not really like a culture, and this would be an opportunity to get rid of it.
Maybe.
Who knows?
You'd think he'd be less helpful to them, though, then.
He hasn't been super helpful to begin with.
No, but you can, like, he's given the impression that he's trying.
He's been performatively helpful to them
at
the behest of the nightmare, but also like, oh, you know what? I said too many lies. I can't get you access to anything anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my lies are really bad. I'm sorry. It's just no good.
But he had that sweet moment with Theodore.
Yeah, an awkward moment with Theodore.
Who was all
And
flirty.
Let's be fair. Theodore is absolutely the exact person who would fall for the wrong guy.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
Look, I'm not at the point where I'm willing to crack open the accusing parlor and say Jacob is our killer.
No, but you are saying that Jacob stays on the board.
What I'm saying is Jacob is on our board, even if he's not on the girls' board.
Yes, that's true. Before we end our episode, because we have reached basically the end of our chapter.
Muse.
Right? I want to have a quick chat about Cornelia.
Yes.
Remember previously I said that I thought maybe she was part of some kind of anarchist group?
Yeah.
Based on what I read in this chapter and re-looking at the chapter before, I think that that's wrong.
Okay.
I think that she is in some sort of, like, New Age magical progression group that has gone wrong.
Possibly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because she keeps bringing up, like, consensual magic sharing, and yeah. We're pretty sure she's talking about Beckett.
Oh, 100%.
Right? Like,
she's been giving Beckett magic irresponsibly.
It's not super subtle, but I think... Because she talked about, like, an exchange of magic.
Yes.
Right? For advancement and learning. And I'm like, yes, that might be what's happening. But I think either it's gone horribly wrong or she's been taken advantage of.
Quite possibly.
I'm just saying. I think...
Here's the thing.
She's clearly part of something.
I don't exactly recall if I mentioned this last episode. I may have, so I apologize if I'm repeating myself. But Cornelia seems very naive to me. For someone who is as, like, plugged into the politics and to the gossip and to the rumor mill and stuff, she also is very, like...
Rich girl naive?
Yes. Rich girl naive. She's very credulous.
Yeah.
Like, she believes her sister's dirt on Van Doren.
Yep.
Without much scrutiny because, well, why would they lie to me about that? Even though Theodore is like, they lie to you about everything. Like...
Yeah.
But she believes them absolutely about Van Doren. Of course she'd trust Beckett if he just tells her that this is all on the up and up, even if it wasn't. Because you're exactly right. She's rich girl naive.
There's a very particular kind of sheltered that comes with that much money.
Yeah.
You know? Like there's
You're not plugged into reality.
Yeah, there's this real world filter.
Yeah. And this right? is not to say that Cornelia doesn't mean well.
No, not at all.
I'm not trying to suggest that that's the case. And she's got two grounded friends there to keep her from completely floating off into the atmosphere. But she does strike me as the right kind of naive that someone could absolutely take advantage of her.
It's entirely possible, yes.
Yes.
I think you're perfectly valid here.
She's got intelligence, maybe lacks wisdom.
Yes. We talk about these stats a lot.
Yeah. And I'm sure I mentioned that last episode, too.
Probably, so, yes. Yeah.
So with that, I guess we'll wrap up for this week.
Yes.
We'll find out if there's more to chew on as we move into chapter 16 of our novel, which you'll want to read up on in time for next week. In the meantime, of course, as always, you can give us a little rating and review because we appreciate it.
We do appreciate those.
Indeed. You can also reach out to us via the social media.
Yes, there's a whole list for you to choose from. We are on Facebook, Instagram, X, Goodreads, and Blue Skies. We are at The Read Along on most of those. Anything that needs an at.
Yes.
We are at The Read Along.
And of course, you can also send us an email.
Of course. We are TheReadAlong@gmail.com. Surprising no one.
And with that said, as always, we love you very much, and we'll see you next time.
Hoppa Easter, everybody.
Thank you for joining us on The Read-Along with your hosts, Anita and Scott Bourgeois. All Read-Along music is by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. Cover art is by Aaron Beaver. Be sure to join us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at The Read-Along, and check out our group on Goodreads.com.